Good to see everybody this morning. Good to be here with all of you. This is a not only a lively group, but it is it's a good number that is out this morning. And I'm so we have about 35 minutes. All right. Well, we will invest the 35 minutes as wisely as we possibly can. And during the interim between the morning. During the morning service and the Bible study, we'll get a chance to shake some other hands and shake some hands because we haven't shaken a hand so far this morning. But I'm excited about this week and been praying about it, been thinking about it, been very hopeful about it. And we know that good is going to happen, not because I am here, but because of the effort that you all have made. The investment that you all have made. God always blesses the efforts. He always blesses the efforts, and when we put effort, it is indeed going to be blessed. Now, I guess I was not as optimistic as I should have been in the number of copies that I made for the lesson that I wanted to do with you all. So what I am going to do, Shannon is already moving, so I'm going to put one page in his hand for him to get copied for me, and I brought 20. But what we can do, we can distribute these, and as he get the others out, then we'll come around with the other copies. This is going to be an exciting week. Different than it was last time. We went from Sunday through Wednesday, but this time we're going from Sunday through Friday. And I know that it's going to be a totally engaging time, not again because I am doing the speaking, but because you all are already engaged. So all of this is really going to come together, and it's going to be very, very, very fruitful. Now, the lesson that is going to be put in your hands, ladies and gentlemen, it is more complicated than it may seem to be. The only thing that you're going to have on your page is the word character, and then you're going to have a trifold. It looks like one page, but what I'm going to get you to do is I'm going to get you to fold your page into a trifold, okay? And if you need some help with that, then we will work with you on folding this paper for three times, all right? But it's going to be a trifold. Now, essentially, this is, y'all have an instant copy because the copy's already there, all right? So this lesson, as I said, it is more complicated than you may think. Not only is it more complicated than you think, but secondly, it is very, very versatile lesson. Now, just from first sight, you may think this is just so simple, but it's not as simple as you may think it is. What I believe, ladies and gentlemen, is this, is that the character of a thing really represents that thing more than anything else. It is the character of a thing. Now, I know that some of us may think characteristics and character are the same thing. Let's have that discussion for a second. Would you say that character and characteristics are the same thing? Okay, we got a couple of head wags and a moan and nobody talking. So, all right, we got it. We got a no on the floor, all right? So, but no, characteristics and character are two different things. And what you can do with this lesson is this. You can take this lesson, those of you who do ladies' Bible studies, those of you who do youth Bible studies, those of you who want something that is very versatile for a number of situations, you can take this lesson and hand it out to the individuals that you are studying with, and then the lesson takes care of itself. So what I want to do, and I want to do this morning, is just give you a foretaste of what this lesson possibly can be. And I think it is not only a lesson for us to discuss, but I think it's a moment of introspection. It is a moment of looking inside of ourselves and looking at others too. So what you can do, you can take any biblical character, any biblical character, any biblical personality, and then you can write their name, the character of. What I did in it, as sort of to get you thinking, get you talking, is that I have the character of Jesus. And what we're going to do, we're going to take the letters of the word character, and we're going to apply them to Jesus. Now, don't just throw something out there and say, you know, that Jesus' character was this or that, but you're going to have to back it up with some kind of verses or with some true representation or with a true representation of the character of Jesus. You can do it with David. You can do it with Daniel. You can do it both. You can do it both positively, and you can do it adversely also, because there are some individuals who the negative aspect of their character was the thing that spiraled them down, that sent them in a bad path or whatever. And so this is a lesson very good. You can also do it with, you can also do this kind of introspection with a congregation. The character of a particular congregation. For example, if you were to go to the book of Revelation and just look at the seven churches in Revelation as John depicts them, and you can see something about those characters or about the character of a particular congregation. You can do it with the church at Rome. We have 16 chapters that we can look at and say, well, this is the character of the Roman church. You can look at the church at Corinth. And you can say that this is the character, not characteristics. Characteristics and character are two different things. But you look at the character of the Corinthian church, and then you can kind of gauge what, or you can even use it as a predictor of why things went the way that they did go in the Corinthian church. So let's take a slow pitch with a softball and a hardball bat with Jesus, and we're going to knock it out of the park. So let's look at the character of Jesus. And so the C word, give me a character of Jesus that begins with the C word. Compassion. Well, and we got care. We got care. So we got compassion and we have care. There in the book of Matthew chapter 9, if I'm not mistaken, verse number 36, not 31 as I have written on the paper there, but that Jesus saw the multitude, how that they were like sheep without a shepherd, and he had compassion on them. How do we define the word compassion? Or what do we see depicted in the character of Jesus that says, that allows us to say that he had compassion? He met needs. And would you not say that is what compassion is? Meeting the needs. You remember that illustration that Jesus gave about how that two men, not two men, but there was a man who fell among thieves. And then there was a priest that passed by. And there was a Levite that passed by. And then there was this lowly Samaritan that passed by. This man was beaten. He was left on the side of the road. And what did the Samaritan do? He had compassion. And as a result of having compassion, he met that individual's needs. So what all did the Samaritan do? He what? He took the man to an inn. He bandaged the man's wounds. He put the man on his own animal. And when he took him to the inn, he said, listen, if that man owes anything else on my way back, I got it. That is compassion. Compassion attends to a need. It attends to a need. When we get down to, when we get down to the word E, and we may even say, that Jesus was empathetic. He was empathetic. Now, is compassion and empathy the same thing as sympathy and pity? No. The people that I work with in prison, someone comes up to them, man, and tell, man, I feel pity for you. You're about to have a fight. Because convicts don't want to be pitied. You know, man, I pity you. You know, means that, and when you tell a convict, I pity you, means that you're about to take advantage of him. Or someone has taken advantage of him. Or you're telling him he weak. So pity, and what about sympathy? What does sympathy do? Sympathy is Hallmark's has made $1 billion on sympathy card. I'm sorry for your loss, you know. And you send the card and that's it. But that's not what compassion does. You remember the situation with Jesus and the people there in the book of, what is it, Matthew chapter 14. They followed him and they were hungry. And Jesus tells the disciples, the people are hungry. What shall we do? Why do you think Jesus does it that way? Why doesn't Jesus just go and do what he's going to do? Why does he do it that way? Well, when he was getting them ready for where, from when he was going to be gone. And part and parcel of getting them ready for where, for when he is gone, is to kind of put a gauge on where they at right now. And so what he's doing, he's checking their compassion barometer. Where are you with your compassion? So what did they say? Okay, now this is all the way red, and this is all the way this is white. This is no compassion. This is all the way red. Okay, and so here it is. Jesus is checking where the compassion is. This is at 0. This is 100. And they said what? There you go. So has it moved any? Nope. Hadn't moved any. And so the disciple says, well, Lord, we don't have enough for us. By the way, send them into one of the cities or villages so they might find victuals or food. It ain't moved yet. But then there was this boy who had 2 fish and 5 loaves of bread. And so Jesus is provided that meal and he gives it to the disciples. And he tells them, feed him. And so here it is, the compassion is going up. It's going up, it's going up, it's going up. And they see how the Lord provided for them. And the same way it is that their compassion, and Brother Shan is right, he is preparing them for when he's going to leave. But right now, they're stuck on 0. This is just an overbleed to perhaps another lesson. How does the world kind of gauge the Port Lavaca Church of Christ? By what standard more than anything else? I'm sorry, they're not really coming to check your doctrine. They're not trying to say, well, let's see how you all compare to what the Bible teaches. There you go. They check us out by our compassion.
Well, as new members, I was overwhelmed by the compassion.
Yeah. And there you go. And so if you're overwhelmed by the compassion, then here it is. It is the thing that kind of was a selling point. It was a selling point. It closed the deal that these individuals are very, very compassionate. And so when you go back at another time and you do this lesson at another situation, and you may even put this in, and I'm not suggesting, you may even kind of use it kind of as a gauge to see where we are as a church. What is the character of this church? Let's see the scene. Do we care? Is it compassionate? All right. And so, and I know we only had 35 minutes. I've already evaporated it 12 of the 35, so we only have just a few minutes left. So write that down. In fact, you go back to Matthew chapter 14 once again, you find another episode where Jesus is compassionate, You can tell a lot about individuals by their compassion. The word compassion, like most of our words, are compound words. Okay, there are two parts to it. And if we just look at it just with the naked eye, we see we do it with passion. Compassion, with passion. He attended to their to their needs. Who said that he met their needs? Somebody said it right up. Okay, right here. Meeting the needs of an individual is real compassion. But one of the other things that we have to do, we got to know what those needs are. Because sometimes we don't know what the needs are. I've told you before, and I've done it in a Bible study with you all before, there are essentially five areas of needs of all individuals. And the way that we remember, you can write this down, and we ain't going to get to all of these letters. And if we do, it's going to be really fast at the end. But you need to write this down if you don't have it written down already. But there are five areas of needs of all individuals. And those five areas of needs are the things that drive us, like the fish that swim in a certain body of water, and it goes and it spawns and it dies. That's being driven. The same way as these five areas of needs drive us. The way that I taught you all how to remember those five areas of needs, you just write the word spies, S-P-I-E-S, down. Those are the five areas of needs, spies, S-P-I-E-S. Terry, do you remember those? Okay. Spies, S-P-I-E-S. Anybody remember those? Either I didn't do a good job or I didn't teach them to you. So let's take the lesser of evils and say I didn't teach them to you, okay? All right, let's do that. So these are the five areas needs of all individuals. Not only is it and that's why when you say that compassion meets a need, we have to understand what those needs are. So these are the five areas of needs of all people. I don't care who you are. I don't care how wealthy you are. I don't care how poor you are. I don't care how much you feel disenfranchised or whatever. These are the five areas need, S-P-I-E-S, spies, spiritual, intellectual, emotional, physical, and social. These are the five areas of needs of all individuals. I don't know why it works that way, Shan, but the Bible correlates and supports that idea then with Colossians chapter 2, verse number 8, where it says, "Beware lest any man spoil you through philosophy, through vain deceit, after the rules of the world, after the traditions of men, and not after Christ." I don't know why it works that way, but it does work that way, at least King James Version. All right? That those five areas are there. Beware lest any man shall spoil you through philosophy, through vain deceit, through the traditions of men, after the rudiments of the world, and not after Christ. Those are the five areas of needs. And so we say compassion is attending to the need or having affinity towards those needs. Then we got to know what those needs are. Now, and this is some important stuff I'm telling to you right now. If you want to understand what's going on with folks in your life, you got to know what their needs are. And these are the five areas of needs. These are indispensable. Everybody has them. The physical needs, I'm not trying to say, well, I'm saying them in order so that you can remember. But the spiritual needs, the physical needs, the intellectual needs, the emotional needs, and the social needs. Everybody have those needs. One of the things that I teach also, especially to our folks in prison, in this material that I do, this material that I wrote called Mars, is that an addiction is fulfilling those needs in an inappropriate way. So that's what addictions are. Those are the needs that everybody has. We all have spiritual needs. We all have physical needs. We all have intellectual needs. We all have emotional needs, and we all have social needs. Okay, we all have those needs. I like to, and I'm sorry, I have digressed, and I'm not going to get back to my point. But when you talk about attending to those needs, now if we misdiagnose a need, then what are we going to do? We're going to mistreat it. We're going to mistreat it. I like to throw it out to people, and then I'm going to get back on lesson. Okay. I like to throw it out to people this way. When Bill Clinton, for example, had an inappropriate relationship with Monica Lewinsky years ago, Which one of those needs was he fulfilling inappropriately? Someone said lust. The physical need. Wrong. Someone said emotional need. All right. Wrong. Say it again. Intellectual need. In fact, he writes in his book, the reason why he did it, because I could. Why does David? David had multiple wives. Why does David do the thing he did with Bathsheba? Was it a physical need? Of course it wasn't. I'm the king. You don't tell the king no. The king can do what he wants to do. Now bring it to me. I'm the king. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Oh boy, had 1,000 women. You think he had 1,000 women because he had a great physical need? Why did he have these women? Why did he collect them? Because he could. I'm the king. I want the most beautiful. I want the most vivacious. I want the most alluring woman because I'm the king. So if you're meeting needs, and again, I'm off point. But if we're meeting needs, we have compassion. Don't let your compassion be misdirected because sometimes we ain't attending to a person's need. I'll throw another one out at you. Why do you think a young man in the hood sling dope or sell drugs? For those of you who don't know what sling dope is. Granny be talking to her grandson on the phone. Yeah, somebody out there slinging dope, you know. So, but no, sell drugs. Why do you think that person sell drugs? Which need you think he or she is meeting inappropriately? Is it a social need? Is it emotional need? Is it a physical need, intellectual need? Or is it the spiritual need? Someone said social. Are y'all scared now because we're off lesson? Someone says social, trying to belong, some physical because I need food. Wrong and wrong. It's an intellectual need because everybody know his name. I got the best car. You know, I wear the best clothes. I got my bling on. You know what? I'm the man. Because I can tell you what I want you to do just because I got this that you want. That is the most intoxicating thing in the world. True story, I'm at the Wynn Unit teaching a Saturday class and teaching basically the same material. Young man was in my class and says, you know, preacher, I don't smoke, I don't drink, I don't do those kinds of things. You know, what's my trip? So you got the worst trip of all. You're on a power trip. You're on a power trip, and that's intoxicating. Getting back to the lesson, okay. So here it is that Jesus was indeed absolutely compassionate. Absolutely compassionate. Meeting the need. And I'm sorry, I'm back off point again. Rich young man comes to Jesus. And he tells Jesus, what thing that I might do that I might inherit eternal life? Jesus says, well, why do you call me good? There's none good but God. But if you're into the life, keep the commandments. The young man said, well, these have I kept from my youth up. What lack I yet? And then what does Jesus tell him to do? First of all, what does the young man says that he wants or needs to inherit eternal life? What does Jesus tell him to do? Sell what you got. Give to the poor and follow him. What Jesus did, he met that man's need. Was he compassionate? Of course he was. Because Mark says, in Jesus seeing him, he loved him. He had compassion on him. Is compassion feeling for or feeling with? It is feeling with. Shortest verse in all of the scriptures, at least King James Version, is what? John 11:35, Jesus wept. Why is he crying? Not because Lazarus died. There you go. Mary and Martha were there and the women were weeping. He didn't cry for, because Jesus knew what he was going to do. He told the disciples, I must go wake him. He's coming to raise Lazarus. He ain't dying because Lazarus is dead. But the other women and the professional mourners were all there crying. Jesus ain't weeping for someone. He's weeping with someone. Romans chapter 12, verse number 15, rejoice with them that do rejoice and weep with them that weep. He ain't crying because his friend Lazarus is dead. He's crying with someone. That's real compassion. Real compassion. And then, and so, okay, what about the H in the word? Someone said hope. Someone said humble. And that's one of the characters. As Jesus is, I think that compassion is a great character trait of Jesus, or a representation of his character, but I think being humble is another one. How do we see his humility? In fact, the Bible predicted about his humility. Isaiah chapter 53 had to be humble. But what do we see him as far as his humility and his character? What do we see? How does he enter into Jerusalem? Riding on a donkey. Did the foxes have their holes? Did the birds have their nests? But did the Son of Man have anywhere to lay his head? No. Humble. Humble. What would you do? Literally, what would you do if you were the most powerful being on earth? What would you do? Would you let folks spit on you, slap you, bind you, put a heavy cross on your back, and ultimately take you out of the streets, out of the city, and hang you on a cross? Nope. The only thing that allowed Jesus to do it was being, well, love, but he had to humble himself. He humbled himself. And so that speaks volume for the character, of Jesus. Great answer, great answer, great answer. What about the A?
Always.
Always, all right. Now, I would agree. you can't miss with that one, you know. Always. Always. Is the anchor, yeah. Wow. Yeah. I never thought about that one. Of all the A's I have conjured in my mind, but I never thought about his character being that of an anchor.
Ascending.
And I would go with that also. I will go with that also. Because everything about Jesus was ascending. You know what's the unique thing about a person who has who is a character, or one of the traits of their character is an ascending individual, is that not only does he or she ascend, but they bring others with them. My coach in high school said this. He said, a strong man can carry two. A strong man can carry two. And that's Jesus. Carrying not only two, but carrying the 12, and then carrying the whole world. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Any others before we go to the next letter? And I think that our time is almost up. It is 34 and a half after the hour. Well, let's go to the R. Okay, let's go to the R and see how far we can get. Resurrected. Well, we need not something necessarily that he did, even though much of it is what he did to represent his character, but we need a character trait.
Responsible,
reliable. Someone said respect. Okay. Reverend. Now, when you throw the word reverent out there, ladies and gentlemen, this is Jesus. He talks about, and what about us? Let's take it, and our time is up, but let's just, what you can do, I'm going to talk about Reverend a little bit more in a second, but what you can do, you can take the next sheet, or the next on the trifold, and you can talk about Paul. You can talk about anyone and put them there, and this is, you will run out of time every time you use this, because there is so much depth to the character of an individual. You can use it both positively and adversely also in talking about characters of individuals. Oh, all right, a quarter after. Okay, well, good. We have 9 more minutes. So let me talk about the idea of reverent. The thing about Jesus that made him so reverent, at least towards the Father, that made him reverent, is that Jesus not only was reverent towards the Father, he was reverent towards the Scriptures, he was reverent towards those things. The thing that brought him in conflict with the religious bureaucracy was his reverence. What is the first thing you find Jesus doing? The very first act, he's recruiting the disciples, but the very first act that let us know that he is Messiah. Even before he changed the water to wine. All right. When he was 12 years old, he went to the house of God. And his mother and father said, why have you troubled us so? And he said, one translation said, I need to be my father's house. Another says, I need to be at my father's business. But where is he? He's in the temple. And then Keith was saying about the time that he went and cleansed the temple. And they said, and they knew that the scripture has been fulfilled, that it was eaten up with the zeal of God, reverent. I know, ladies and gentlemen, that I guess the quid pro quo as far as the church is concerned is that, yes, we are a family. We are a family, plain and simple. But we must not have a casual, cavalier, do what you want to do, anything kind of go kind of thing as far as the church is concerned. There has to be a reverence. There has to be a reverence. There has to be a reverence. Because if it is not a reverence, then what we might as well do, we might as well call it a club. And it is not the body of Christ. You have to have a particular reverence, a reverence to it. I'm not coming in and doing some kind of Gregorian chant. Oh, let me do it. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying that when we come together, we are in the very presence of the Most High in a special way. For where two or more gather together in his name, he is in the midst. And there is it's a holy thing. It is a reverent thing. Romans 16:16. Salute one another with a holy kiss. The churches of Christ salute you. And so Jesus was absolutely reverent. I like that. Absolutely reverent towards the things of God. And I think that is the contrast, which is very stark, between he and others. Is that they cease being reverent towards God. It is a fearful thing to fall into the hands of a living God. That means 5 minutes. All right. Okay. And it doesn't mean come out swinging, huh? Okay. What about the other A? Okay. And I think it is an aspect of his being. But we're looking for We're looking for something that really nails down his character.
Availability.
And that's a good one. And that is a good one. You know, when I taught this lesson before, one of the points that I made about the lesson was this. I want you to think, stretch your minds for 1 second. Was there anybody who ever died in Jesus' presence? Was there anybody who ever died in Jesus' presence? No, they died after him. Huh? No, they died after him. They died after he did. No one ever died in his presence. Even when he met that widow who was about to bury her only son, and she would have been resigned to a horrible fate, a woman with no husband and no children, but Jesus stopped the funeral procession and raised that woman's son available. Mark chapter 5, he comes over to the other side and he finds this man in the tombs, cutting himself, screaming, breaking chains. People of the city were afraid of him. But here it is, Jesus made himself available. When people sometimes hear what my schedule is and where the things that I do or that I have to do, you know, they sometimes think, man, you must be good. No, I'm not good, I'm available. And that's all that's, and I say that all the time. I'm not good, I'm available. And when you make yourself available, guess what? Then God is going to bring the water to you. You don't have to bring the boat to him. You make yourself available. And that's what Jesus did. He made himself available. Once again, keep your hands up. Okay. That's another good aspect. Very, very good. Very good. They couldn't trap him. Oh, let me throw another, since you brought that up, let me throw another twist and let me strain your brain for a second. What miracle did Jesus do more than any other miracle? Say again. He healed, okay. The blind. This miracle more than any other miracle. I'm not saying you're wrong, but I'm trying to get some more discussion. Okay, about the blind. Someone said, all right, or the blind. And so you would consider that miraculous? If that's the qualifier, huh? Nobody else could do it. The miracle that Jesus did more than any other miracle is the miracle of divine knowledge. More than any other miracle he ever did was the miracle of divine knowledge. How was he able to tell the young man what he needed to do? Divine knowledge. And when they came to him and they tried to put him in one of those traps, he knew their thoughts. John chapter 4, when Jesus is in Samaria, the disciples come back after seeing him with the woman at the well. He read their thoughts. Go back and look at it. Go back and look at it. You'll see the miracle that Jesus did more than any other miracle was the miracle of divine thought. It was his acumen as a result of that he was able to deal with these individuals. So now you have something. You got some information now, so you hold your cards close to your chest when you ask somebody, what was the miracle that Jesus did more than any other miracle? Then you tell them the miracle of divine knowledge. And that was part of his great intellect, his great acumen, that he could answer these questions and did not trap him in some kind of a situation where he could be condemned. Even when the woman caught in adultery, he already knew what the deal was. And the reason why he answered the way that he answered was he knew what their thoughts was. Any question? Yes. You can't. can't?
Cannot.
You cannot, no. You cannot. You cannot have compassion without love. No way. In fact, love is compassion. Love is compassion. Any other comments or any question, anything lingering? I'm sorry we didn't go through all of it, but I knew we wouldn't. But hopefully we went through enough of it that gives you an idea about how to go through this little exercise. Put the microscope on your own life. Put the microscope on the church. Put it on other individuals. If you want to find out where a person really is, put their name down there. And that looks, let's look at their character and see where they are. Thank you so very much. Appreciate it so much.